this is a difficult time. So this is the Waste Diversion Collections and Education Subcommittee of Environmental Services Advisory Committee. Today is Wednesday, November 2nd, 2022. It is 3:03, and we are order of business is roll call. This is Margo Garcia. I'm here.
Chrissy Arter, present.
All right. And we have one visitor, Trevor, from the from ESAC with us. The rest, I believe, are staff who are here. So let's get going. We had, did the minutes ever get out? I didn't get a chance to check in the last while whether they came along.
I sent them last night.
Okay. All right. I didn't get a chance to see them, but did you read them over, Chris?
No, I'm sorry.
You didn't either. All right, well, let's table it till next time. I'm sorry, Lucy. I'm sure you rushed to get them done in time. And
that's okay.
We were just sidetracked for another time. So the minutes for October 5th are tabled. All right, the chairperson's report. I have a couple of news articles, which I like to bring up. We've talked a couple of times about what's going to happen to the electric vehicle batteries when their time is has come. And in around the 1st of October, there was an article in the newspaper that a new lithium ion battery recycling plant in Eloy is expected to employ 110 production workers when it opens next year. The Eloy facility will process lithium ion batteries that have reached the end of their service life, as well as battery manufacturing scrap, which additional services include disassembly, sorting, warehousing, and diagnostic testing, said the Indianapolis-based Heritage Battery Recycling, part of Serba Solutions. The facility is expected to launch operations by mid-2023 and process enough battery material to support 50,000 EVs annually. The plant will extract nickel, cobalt, manganese, and lithium that will serve as raw material feedstock to provide battery-grade salts for new cathode and battery manufacturing, the company said. And they already have a company in Mesa, which is one of six in North America, including two lithium-ion battery recycling plants. So we can at least see there's going to be some recycling. We're not going to have to deal just with landfilling or, I guess, it become hazardous waste, which is something we had been asking about a number of times. The other one was that the rate hikes did make it into the newspaper as all also, and it listed trash and water rates to rise. They put them together, so it's a little hard to sort out what it is, but it's, of course, the proposal that we back that went before the city council. And the third thing I wanted to, those of us who read Steve Kozacek's newsletter will have noticed their problems with contamination in the special plastics collection. And this last time was quite serious because the materials that were from Tucson that were at the plant in Gardena, apparently the shredder went through, they think it was a lithium battery. It broke the shredding piece, and they also have had some fires from lithium batteries in the plastics. So Steve once again is asking people to pay more attention. I'm interested, you know, we've talked over and over again about the problems of contamination. Here's a group that's willing to make that extra effort, and yet still there is an issue of contamination. So I think that speaks to us of some of the difficulties that are ahead.
I think they said there someone put in some metal rods too. So I hope somebody's not, you know, trying to mess things up on purpose.
Right, right. That could be one of the things. He's asking for clear bags so they can see those things. So
yeah,
they may have to rip open the black plastic. I don't know exactly how they're handling them at that end. Anyway, once again, we have contamination issues, even where people are doing it voluntarily. All right. I sat next to Trevor at this Zero Sustainability Day and was fascinated by the things that they've been trying at the university. Because I know we've talked about this here many times. What do you do with all the student stuff? That's not just this university. When I was teaching in Virginia, we had the same problem. What do you do with it and how do you waste divert it? And a lot of it's really good stuff. It's just they couldn't fit it in the car or they were flying home in an airplane. And so there was really no convenient way to store it. I don't know if you all follow the news, the comics, but there was one whole long comic sequence, and I think it's Luann of storing materials at somebody else's house. So that's the other option. All right, Trevor, I was hoping you could tell us a little bit about what you and your program at the university has been trying to do, some of the techniques you've tried, what's worked, what's not worked. You shared a little bit of that at the Zero Sustainability. I think we'd like to dig in even deeper.
So sure. Yeah, happy to. Okay, thank you, Margot. I'll just go back to I've been here at the university in some capacity since 2012. So a little bit longer range of history, which is helpful. The most significant move out efforts really kind of date back to, I believe, spring of 2016, which is when a program called Dodge the Dumpster got off the ground. And it was a really focused program on, you know, diverting stuff that could be cleaned, donated, resold, all of these things to keep those materials out of the landfill. In 2016, it sort of started with a relatively small group of paid student employees, which has its own issues in terms of hiring for 1 or 2 weeks or leaning on existing student employees from other departments at the university. But the reason that they were focused on paid is just because there's a little bit more accountability that comes with, you know, somebody getting a paycheck. There's also more incentive to show up if they can get paid for their efforts. I don't remember the exact diversion numbers from any of these years, but, you know, sort of a round estimate of what I could remember is we probably diverted in that year around 60 or 70,000 pounds of materials. And the majority of that was stuff that was taken to the 34th Street warehouse. And over the course of the summer, cleaned up, sorted through. Some of those diversion numbers inevitably ended up in the landfill. We don't really have any data on how much was thrown away just because it was broken appliances or, you know, stuff that may have been too dirty to clean or bedding or some other things that could have been more difficult to deal with. Some of that was donated to various nonprofits and whatever was good enough to be resold was then sold through the Wildcat Rummage Sale, which happened at the warehouse through university surplus. I think that in that first year, it was a one-day thing. There were a lot of issues that came up with the payment systems and how surplus at the time was doing things. You had to have all sorts of different receipts and other things, and it was very clunky. So it didn't go great, but that was sort of taken into consideration for the following year. So 2016 was more of a pilot year. 2017 was a bit more successful. I think over 110,000 pounds of stuff was diverted. It was very similar to the first year, but the physical footprints of what happened on campus expanded. So more dorms, more stuff, and a few more streams. I think in 2017, we were also able to divert mattress pads, which are, there's nowhere in Tucson or Southern Arizona that will recycle them. Nobody wants to reuse them, or at that point in time, nobody really wanted to reuse them because of hygiene reasons. I'm not sure if that has changed at all. But we were able to partner with a group in Mexico who would actually take them over the border and use them in shelters down there. We were able to we had a few new partnerships that year, if I can remember correctly, including Sister Jose's, who would take open toiletries and other things. And some other smaller folks and organizations here and there. But that was really sort of like the peak year for Dodge the Dumpster. But it was also a very unsustainable year because it was incredibly hot. There were really only two staff members sort of running the entire thing for the 2 weeks that Move Out is really in full force. And a whole bunch, I think something like 20 or 30 student employees. There was a lot of effort that went into it, and there just wasn't a whole lot of staff support to keep things running. Things were cleaned up over the summer, very similar to in 2016, and we had the Wildcat rummage sale again. And I might be, no, that was right. 2017, 2018. I'm not sure on the years. 2018 might have been our peak year. It all sort of blends together. But it was very similar for those 3 years. And 2018 would have been spring of 2018 and then fall rummage, Wildcat rummage sale of fall of 2018 would have been the last one. That one went way, way better, the Wildcat rummage sale in 2018. We had a much better coordination and systems and processes with Surplus to get things done. Things were priced to move. The financial sustainability of this has also been difficult, but things were priced to move. They moved. And what was supposed to be a 2-day sale was a 1-day sale because we sold out of everything except for some clothing. Most of the good clothing was picked through. The vast majority of the clothing was taken in hangers. Nobody wants hundreds and hundreds and thousands of hangers. But I think we sold just about everything. The cost of the program was not covered, though, by the sales of that program. After that, we had a lot of internal transitions around the Office of Sustainability. We had, of course, COVID come along. So lots of things have shifted since those years where we tried out that program. In my opinion, I still think a program like that can work with the right resources, people, and time in place. But there are some other challenges that have sort of arisen since then that we would need to deal with in order to continue a program like that. Since then, the university has tried out a few different things to still try to divert waste from the dorms, albeit on a much lesser scale. So let me see if I can pull up a document real quick so I can have the most recent year's diversion. And unfortunately, I wasn't able to get the total amount of waste that is produced during move out. That number I'm still not really clear on, but I do have diversion numbers. Move out. That's not helpful. There it is. Okay. Can you go? Sorry. There we go. Okay. So we've tried to mix and match over the years various donation partners who can come in and take part or all of campus and service it during those 2 or so weeks towards the beginning to middle of May. There are a lot of needs from housing and residential life in order to ensure that things keep moving smoothly and that we don't run into major issues of lobbies being filled with people's trash or, you know, stuff that could be donated. So there is a great need from housing to ensure that, especially on those really, really high move out days, that material isn't stacking up. So whatever donation partner we've had, some of them will, there's an expectation that during certain days of move out, they will have to be servicing all 24 or 25 of our dorms on campus twice a day, regardless of their size. Some of the dorms, some of our larger ones, need to be serviced maybe even three times a day because there are so many students moving out and trying to donate things. And if it's not getting donated, it's getting thrown away. And so then it becomes a waste. We use waste management for the vast majority of waste hauling on campus. Goodwill will no longer service campus. They felt, from what I've heard, they felt that the quality of the material that they were getting and what they can then resell it for was not working out in terms of the manpower required to service campus for those 2 weeks. And then, of course, sort through things, clean things, all of the, all everything that needs to happen for them to resell. Salvation Army was running into some similar issues, but I have heard that they basically ended most of the service that they had that would be able to do that for campus. And have moved most of those operations up to Phoenix. So they don't actually have the physical infrastructure or people to be able to service campus in any meaningful way. Those were two, really the only two players that were capable at any point in the past of servicing all of campus at once. And so Big Brothers, Big Sisters, Habitat for Humanity, Casa de los Niños before they shut down, none of them are big enough to service all of campus during that 2 week period at the rate that we need to be servicing dorms. So what we've sort of started to do in more recent years is piece out various parts of campus. So we have four zones of dorms. We have Highland, which is right around Highland Avenue, Park, which is right around Park Avenue. The historic district, which is sort of that area around James E. Rogers Way up toward Old Main Centennial. And then we now have North District, which is really, if I remember correctly, North is really just our Honors Village, which is right at the university boundary. This year we sort of tried an adopt dorm approach where we pieced out various dorms to a whole bunch of different organizations. So we had Suburban Miners, who was trying to take on most of campus, and they did a pretty good job. They were able to collect approximately 55,000 pounds this year. University of Arizona Surplus decided to see how they might be able to step in and do something a little bit more intensive themselves, and they took on the Honors Village, which has the largest number of students on campus, and that's right around 1,100, I believe, maybe closer to 1,200, but I think it's between 1,000 and 1,100, and they got right around 5,200 pounds of material that they were able to then clean up and resell. Gospel Rescue Mission also came in and did some servicing of a few dorms in the historic district, I think. And then the Office of Sustainability, my office, teamed up with our campus pantry to do food collection at quite a few dorms on campus. And we were able to collect about 2,900 pounds of food. Mm-hmm. And then Big Brothers, Big Sisters came in and did one dorm, I believe, and they were able to divert right around 1,700 pounds. So if you add all of those up, it's just shy of 70,000 pounds of material that we were able to divert through this adopt dorm approach. So that's sort of kind of eking into what we were able to do with a full-on Dodge the Dumpster program, but with much less financial and logistical support going into things. And that's likely sort of the direction we're going to go for May of 23, so move out for this year. My office has had some conversations with our campus closet / basic needs center about trying to either ourselves or working with Surplus or another organization to divert some of the material that comes out of it for a campus thrift store, or just to direct things straight to campus pantry, or campus closet / basic needs center. But that will likely be small scale as well. That's sort of everything in a nutshell for on campus and largely what we've tried. We don't let any mini fridges go to landfill because they're not allowed to be taken to landfill. So those usually get collected by surplus and then resold. Occasionally they will be decommissioned. The refrigerant will be taken out and then landfilled or recycled. But that's pretty much everything in a nutshell there. We haven't done anything for off-campus. We did used to have an off-campus housing program of sorts that focused on how to get information out to students who don't live in our dorms. But that hasn't been around for many, many years. And we haven't tried to engage on the sustainability side with any of those large high rises, any of the larger apartment complexes near or even farther away from campus. So that's definitely a need, but we haven't touched it.
And why haven't you touched that?
We haven't even figured out on campus.
You have enough to do on campus.
Yeah.
I mean, those high rises seem so, you know, contained, but I guess the dorms are too. So
yeah.
It's the same thing. Nothing on the high rises. Oh my God. I wonder what they do with there. I guess they just get big roll-offs.
They do a similar process, I believe. I haven't actually, this is just anecdotal, me driving by. I believe they just get roll-offs fairly similar to how the university sort of operates. And regardless of the diversion efforts that we put in place, there's still a large amount of landfill waste. And so housing gets probably 10 or 15 15 to 30 yard roll-offs, depending on the location, to just allow students to put their things in the trash if they need to.
Okay.
Wow.
I know. when Trevor was talking about, because people right away said, we'll get some of the nonprofits. And I thought it was really interesting that the nonprofits felt overwhelmed by what they were getting. And I was especially surprised your comments about Big Brothers Big Sisters, because Thrifts, their Savers, is near me. And I just see a constant stream, and they're awfully good about taking everything. However, I noticed that they're usually one to two large semi-trailer tractors sitting there. I don't know if that stuff, they don't know what to do with stuff they're going to send somewhere else, stuff they're going to take to the landfill. I don't know quite what it's I've never asked for a tour or anything of what they do. So you're going to try it again this next year, you think? How, you mentioned several times the finances, so when these nonprofits come, they station their personnel by their collection site.
Correct. So for those 2 weeks, it's essentially you're on call from sunrise to sunset. The actual need depends on the dorm and the day of the week. So as we get further into move out, closer to commencement, the number of people moving out grows really, really rapidly. And thankfully, housing has a really good idea of what that looks like. And so they know exactly what to expect. And so those exact needs are made clear to whoever we're partnering with. And I'm just sort of, I haven't been directly involved in quite a while, so I don't know all of the exact specifics, but it's basically you're on call and you're just sort of driving around campus picking up stuff. Whenever your box truck is typically what's used fills up, you go to wherever you're going to sort those things, drop off, come back, and you're just doing that for really the entire day for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
What could we do? I mean, I'm not proposing. I have no authorization, but yes, could you? But if in a ideal world, what kind of help could you use to make this more successful?
Yeah, I'll throw out there, since we use waste management, I'm not sure what sorts of tensions, or not tensions, but conflicts might arise in that world. The adopt a dorm approach, I think, has some merit as something to consider to explore in a little bit more detail. We're still missing a lot of material streams because, you know, when we bring in our campus pantry or Gospel Rescue Mission, even Big Brothers Big Sisters, they might be looking for a very narrow window of materials and things that they are interested in because they have an immediate need or use for them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, diversifying the types of the organizations and the types of streams that we might be able to capture could be of help. I only listed, you know, outside of the university, Suburban Miners, Gospel Rescue Mission, and Big Brothers Big Sisters. Suburban Miners certainly captured the vast majority in there, but there are a lot of other organizations in Tucson that we could certainly we would welcome bringing to the table to try to explore, you know, maybe Community Food Bank of Southern Arizona, without conflicting too much with Campus Pantry, might be able to also be a part of that.
Kind of food are they leaving? Canned goods?
You name it, it's there.
Cheese? Okay.
Yeah, it's all over the place. I helped with a few of the pickups, and we have, I don't even know how big they are, but we have some big blue rolling bins that are probably about 4 feet tall. You know, those are filled with, you know, even the students who are trying to do well and not throw away things, they're gonna be getting on a plane and have a whole bunch of food that is left over at the end of the year.
Yeah.
So it's everything from, you know, non-perishables, you name it, it's there. There's a lot of weird stuff. To even perishable foods that we were able to divert because we were there picking up while students were trying to get rid of stuff. And it was, you know, from a food safe perspective, sure, we were able to get it back to a refrigerator to be used.
Yeah. Huh. That's just, I mean, it just sort of boggles the mind what people do in their dorms these days. the food, yeah. Yeah. The bedding is a bit of a, so you're not taking any bedding, or some people are taking bedding, or?
So nobody has taken bedding in a while, to my knowledge. It's possible it happens here and there. The bedding, so COVID, I skipped a few years between end of Dodge the Dumpster and the start of this Adopt-a-Dorm thing. There were two full years with COVID that everything went to the landfill. That especially that first year when things hit in March, most students weren't able to come back to dorms, and there was a lot of stuff that was thrown out for them or boxed up for them, and it got really crazy in there. Bedding, there was some ability for us to wash some things. We did have some concerns arise in, I think, 2018 around scabies. So there's sort of an additional level of hygiene that we would probably require if, you know, anyone was collecting it in force. There is, of course, the ability to donate it probably to a pack or other animal shelters if there was a great need there. But we have 8,000 students who are moving out, and most of them don't want to keep their bedding for the next year. So whether we're looking at mattress pads or actual, you know, sheets and comforters and that stuff, that is a big material stream that isn't really being looked at.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I'm, you know, you know, as a mother of someone who goes off to school, and I think of how much it costs to send us a new set of bedding, including blankets and comforters and stuff. I mean, no wonder it costs $30,000 a year to go to school, because 5,000 of it is stuff that you just throw away each year. And there's no one has tried to set up any kind of storage thing for $20, you can store 3 boxes and then pick it up, or there's been no effort at that kind of thing?
Yeah. I think some service like that does exist. And I'm thinking back to my own time in the dorms. I think I was able to box up some things and somebody would store them for the summer. I was fortunate that I had friends here in Tucson who let me store my boxes at their house. So I did never use a service like that, but I think that might exist. The other thing that we're going to be combating is there are also a good number of students who come here from California or Texas, even from here in the state, who are incredibly privileged and don't need anything in that room. And I remember I worked in desk operations throughout my undergrad, and there were students who, when they left, they just left their room and it became the RA's responsibility or problem to clean up because they didn't have to take their 60-inch TV or any of their clothing because they were going to get brand new stuff when they went home. Mm-hmm. So there's also that level of privilege for some of the students in the dorms that, you know, there's that level of not having to care, that even if we have the perfect diversion system set up, like, they're not going to participate in any way, shape, or form. So that's just sort of something else that it feeds into it as well.
Have you ever contacted Youth on Their Own? Because they set up pantries for the kids and, you know, clothes. And
they have thrift shops, yeah.
Yeah,
I don't think so. I will add that to the list, but I don't think that we've ever worked with Youth on Their Own.
Yeah, they'd be a good group.
Yeah.
Because the clothing, at least, would be something they would be probably very interested in.
And we do canned food drives for them around the holidays and, you know, stuff like that.
Okay.
A lot of them are in apartments or fostering or fostered. Well, it just is a, I applaud you for what you've done so far. I just, you know, as a person who's believes in waste diversion, it still just staggers me that so much goes in. And yet, you know, I know everywhere that's the case. I mean, I lived in a condo in Richmond and I opened one day the garbage bin and there were 6 beautifully folded sweaters, you know. Someone would just take them from the door and put them in because they got new ones, I guess. And and they moved on to another place.
Yeah. I think one of the other problems, and this could be an area that we explore more. I think one of the other areas that we've heard challenges of in recent years is a lack of space to store things. If we were to go back to a Dodge the Dumpster model, we don't have the space to store and clean and then, you know, resell these things necessarily. The warehouse for us worked really well at the time, but the space we were using was somebody else's space and they have now started to use that space. The warehouse, if you've been in it, it has sort of 2 floors. You wouldn't necessarily know it, but the second floor is completely empty because it's not up to code. And there's a lot of square footage up there, but there's no way to use that space. And all of the space on the ground floor is spoken for in terms of storage, as far as we've been able to explore in the conversations that we've had with them more recently. We've looked at some of the other storage spaces that the university has under its ownership. Sunnyside building, that is what it is called. It's for document storage largely. It's not climate controlled. It's very far from campus, and leads into some other issues. So space, if we were to be more active in the diversion, which it can, I mean, you know, putting a student or, you know, a volunteer in front of a roll-off to say, let me take your things and sort them for you is incredibly effective in diverting things that, you know, they might not know to divert. And, you know, to do that work for them can be really beneficial to increase diversion numbers. But, you know, they're, I'm just going on tangents now. It increases the amount of material you end up with, and you need a place to deal with that. And we just don't really have that.
Yeah. I mean, that is something, for instance, I mean, I'm sure with the student, that's really good, but that is certainly a possibility where we have master recyclers that, you know, one thing would be to give you some support in terms of the recycling community overall. I mean, I can imagine Sustainable Tucson. I mean, 2 weeks is not a very long time. And I'm sure it's mostly concentrated in the last 5 days or 4 days. So that's when you need 20 people and you only need 5 people the other days. You know, it seems to me that we could, there could be mobilization of additional people who care about this to help, to see it as in part as an educational effort.
Yeah.
So, I mean, people of privilege, I would love to do some education with them.
Oh, gosh. I mean, I worked on the ground really heavily on Dodge the Dumpster for 2 years in my undergrad. And I mean, you're right. The things that people will throw out, it's just mind boggling. Yeah. Also, the things that people will throw out make you question, why do you have this? in a lot of different respects. But it's really insightful as somebody who works that, but also to, you know, for whatever time you have with the person handing you stuff, it is also another very valuable educational experience, because I think 80 or 90% of our students are freshmen. So they're going to take that knowledge with them, whether or not they stay in the dorms.
Sure. Yeah. No, that I think that's an important takeaway from this is that educational piece. And that's why it seems to me that you could mobilize a larger community to see it as education. Mm-hmm. I mean, I remember the compost cats at a time when they were standing by the recycling bins that were set up in Tucson Meet Yourself, the educational materials that they could do at that time was so valuable. I know they got bored silly doing it, but in the larger picture, that was important. And I've done that in other situations, and it can lead to a lot of interesting discussions.
Yeah.
Trevor was a compost cat.
I know.
Yeah. And we did do that education again this year with compost cats at TMY.
Well, good.
For the first time in a few years. So that, and it went well. And yeah, the education, it definitely happens. And I think this year, I was just watching. I was an attendee. I did not work it. I let our students and our Compost Cats team take that on. But as an attendee, it looks like people were asking more questions and seemed to have a better idea of where to put things than when I worked it in the past.
Well, I hope over the years we made some dents.
Christina hopes that too.
Even though we know that we have so many people, well, we have a large percentage of people who move in and come from areas with different rules and different abilities to do the waste diversion. Mm-hmm. So the takeaway I hear is that you need warehouse space. That's close
space, to campus, volunteers, organizations to work with. All of those definitely welcome.
Okay.
And there is a market.
There is. And again, some of the things that are coming out of this, you know, it might be the number of plastic tourists from Target. Good Lord. Endless. Some of them not as high value, even cleaned up. You know, you can get the same set of plastic drawers from Target brand new for $15. But when you have certainly students who are not as financially well off, if they can spend $5 on it, it's the exact same thing. It matters. Yeah. But then there are those high-end things that certainly come out of these dorms. We've seen laptops. We've seen TVs, lots of mini fridges. I think I may have shared this during the workshop. You know, we don't price things, even pricing things to move. You know, you're gonna get Calvin Klein. I even saw something Gucci. Like there are some high-end things that come out of the dorms that can also be priced a little bit higher. That also, you know, can help with the overall program and its financial sustainability.
Sure. And you're only taking part of it because the suburban miners and so forth are selling themselves what they get, and working out their own swapping. That's what's fascinating to me. I would like to know the behind the scenes, how they're working this through.
And I don't actually know either. So I would be interested in following up with them.
Okay. Brittany, do you have, Christine, do you have any other questions or?
No, I'm fine.
Okay. So Trevor.
I used to go to those sales. So.
Yeah. You know, there's also that period when you're young and forming a household, there's lots of things you need. And then there comes to a period where you're trying to get rid of a lot of those things that you have if you're downsizing or something. Mm-hmm. So, and I think your suggestion of the youth on their own is a really good one. And I think the other is Sustainable Tucson. They are interested in zero waste and so forth. Christina, do you have some other ideas of groups that might be interested in helping?
You know, there's, I actually had thought of Youth on Their Own. Because they're, you know, they're kids that really just don't even have anything. The other one that just came up to me was Gasita. They work with the refugees. And
Alitas.
Is Kashita or Alitas?
It's Kashita.
It's Kashita, yeah. We've worked with Barbara a lot in the past, primarily through Compost Cats, but that is a really good idea.
She was telling me we couldn't do it for this week's zero waste collection event, but she was saying that they need luggage. Because the refugees arrive with, you know, whatever they have in a plastic bag. Mm-hmm. So she said, you know, they needed luggage and
backpacks. You know,
I would imagine that, yeah, backpacks would probably be great. And then even like any plastic bins or, you know, I mean, it seems to me, and I would imagine, you know, bedding and things like that would be wanted. The other thing, you know, the refugees, years ago when I first started working with Barbara, they were making scrubs. They were sewing scrubs. And so, you know, maybe material from sheets and stuff. You know, I don't know. It's worth having the discussion with her. But they are in the process of moving to the space at St. Mark's where the Tucson Organic Gardeners used to be.
Oh, okay.
So, we added them to our zero waste collection event because she needs canning jars. So we're going to see if we can get any. I actually had one person today tell me she's got about 20, so that she's going to come. But yeah, that's the ones I could think of right off.
Well, those are good suggestions. Overall, the refugees, a lot of them are moving on. There's also another group that's doing refugee resettlement here that's not so much the Alitas, who I think is just moving people on. I'm not sure what their name is, but I would think any basic idea, things for getting people setting up in apartments. I mean, when I think when Steve first started his store, filled his whole office space with furnitures and all kinds of things.
Cooking.
Cooking ware.
What about, I should know more about this, but City of Two Suns, like, or maybe it's Pima County, low income housing programs or anything in that realm?
You know, we'd have to check with housing and community development, but, you know, that might be a possibility. You've got people that are, you know, moving into housing and they may not have much of.
Exactly. Well, they're trying to move homeless into housing. So,
yep, that would be another group. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know why how you structure it without the warehouse where you bring everything to and then the people come through and
I mean,
what they need. And I mean, I understand that issue of.
I think commencement is probably. So the use of the warehouse is really more to store those things in order to clean everything up in mass and do one. You could do one large event like the Wildcat Rummage Sale, or you could sort of meter things out through a thrift store, through. You know, I'm thinking from that university lens through our basic needs center, those sorts of things. But there is also the potential for a model that, you know, we go and store things in like on the floor of a parking garage and commencement, we fill our parking garages. But, you know, if we could get a floor of a parking garage just to store things in sort of a semi-sheltered area, where people could come and grab things themselves. We don't necessarily have to have hold it for that long. It could be you know, the weekend after move out, we open things up to the community and they come and grab whatever they want. And that sort of works into, I guess, I think one of the topics at the workshop was a reuse store.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of similar-ish model.
We got lots to think about. For sure.
Yeah. So Trevor, I hope you will decide to join our group and help us think this work through on this, because I think this is a really focused area with a specific time. It's really a manageable problem if we can, you know, put all the pieces together. And there certainly is a lot to be diverted that is extremely useful. I mean, I think you're right. The thought of going of that, all those mattress pads going to Mexico is a wonderful idea. And, you know, there is sanitation. I certainly recognize that. Bleach is wonderful. Throw in a whole lot of bleach.
A lot of bleach, a lot of washing machines for the bedding. There are ways to get around those things.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just a matter of once you know what it is. All right. Well, thank you for that. And I think we need to keep moving. Please stay with us and join in on the rest of the time.
We'll do.
Okay. So the next thing is we look at the MRF report. And Christina does that. You're going to, Lucy?
It's really sad.
Lucy, are you going to put that up or? I don't know if she is.
I can put it up. I have it.
Okay. I'm sorry. I didn't know who had it to do.
Yes, I do. Let me see if I can figure out my directions here. Between Teams and Zoom, and so sometimes I just don't know where I'm at.
Here it is.
Okay. So, prices have come down.
Fallen terribly. It's really awful, the drops.
Yes. So you can see here that Ernesto noted that the AR dropped from 105.21 to 69.61. And that means that we have to pay to make up the difference between the ACR and $85. So in addition to the regular fee, we were owing them $15.39 a ton to make up the difference on the ACR.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, excess residue continues to be high. We're still, you know, over $20,000 a month.
Yeah. But the total being $142,000 was the real kicker.
Boy, I haven't seen that since I've been on ESAC, I don't think.
It's one of the bigger numbers.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I remember when, you know, $318,000 was the monthly bill. But yes, it's been tough.
When was that? Do you remember?
In 20, right after the China National Solar.
Oh, you're right. Okay, right. I remember that. Yeah,
that one year we paid close to $4 million.
That's right. Okay.
But, you know, I mean, with markets and plastic having gone up, and, you know, we were doing pretty well.
I mean, it's just astonishing that PET bottles are now at $260 a ton. Whereas not too long ago, they were higher than aluminum, meaning at $1,200 and $1,300.
Right.
So I guess that's part of this oil fussing that's going on, and I don't know what else.
It's really very interesting. We had our SWANA, Arizona Recycling Coalition symposium last week, and the keynote speaker was a gentleman, Adam Minter. He's a writer for Bloomberg, and he's written books on, you know, the relevant to sustainability, Junkyard Planet, and Secondhand. And he actually showed some charts that showed that really the markets were not doing well, even starting back in like 2011. And then it just, you know, really in 2018, when the China National Sword hit, it really just pushed it more. But he said we were already starting to see the markets drop. So, you know, we just have to continue to do what we do.
Well, we need to develop, you know, more of these industries that can use the input. I mean, we know that, for instance, those bottles are going into carpeting, and if the housing market is falling through and people aren't buying new new carpeting, then that's where people aren't renovating their businesses and so forth. I mean, it's all hooked to each other. So
somebody just reached out to me, who I guess PB's Frontline had something on about. I haven't had a chance to watch. I got the link to watch it, but basically saying that most of the stuff, even the stuff that we send to be recycled, doesn't get recycled. And I don't know, you know, I mean, I told her about the whole thing with Adam Minter, because, you know, of course, for years we heard that things going over to China were just going into a landfill and being burned and putting, you know, little children to work in horrible conditions. And he actually showed videos of all the old Christmas lights that end up there, and how they remove the copper wire and recover it and then make it into more. So he said, you know, it is a closed loop. It's just there's a lot of misinformation that is generated, you know, and I think perhaps because people have an agenda. I don't know what the answer is.
I agree with you. I think there is a lot of misinformation. Now I hear it about plastic bags, and yet I know that in Virginia, in Winchester, there was a company taking the plastic bags and making the plastic boards, track boards and so forth, out
Trex. Trex is still very much and, with us.
Yeah. So, I mean, I know firsthand that those things are happening. And I saw the old cardboard being used as part of the paper making process. So it certainly can be, you know, whether all of the systems are operating correctly is a different matter. I mean, it's just like Trevor was telling us that, you know, some of this stuff goes into the wrong place or ends up, you know, having to go into the landfill because there's no one to use it right at that moment and there's no storage place for it.
Right.
And you could say the same thing for grain. You know, how long do you store grain in the Ukraine and then finally send it out on the ships? If you don't have the storage place, then the grain is lost right. as well.
Yeah, so
it's a complicated issue. Yeah,
it's very complicated, and I certainly don't have all the answers. And, you know, when we hear from companies that say, yes, we're making these things out of PET or recycled paper or whatever. I mean, we can't say, well, you're lying. I mean, I don't know.
I think it's true. I think it's in some cases there's an excess. And so, you know, what if they don't have storage space, then of course they have to do something else with it. What's happening with the contract with the MRF? Do we have any new?
Well, there's still discussions. We are going to have to in just one more month, but I think, you know, we've definitely been having discussions and going back and forth. So there's just some question about how everybody is calculating the proposals.
Right. So there are questions on the numbers.
Not so much the numbers, but just the calculation. So I think we're in another meeting on Monday. We haven't had a chance to get back together since that first one.
And what about the issue of the recyclables that are ending up in the trash stream?
Well, I mean, you know, that's part of it. Now, it was very difficult to measure that last audit because it was after the monsoons,
mm-hmm.
and there was a lot of moisture in the samples that were pulled,
mm-hmm.
and so when you pull them a week ahead, you know, in the week prior, and then of course, you know, they tend to dry out, and then when you go to weigh it at the end, it's going to be lighter because the water is, you know, left.
So
it was a tough one to really, you know, point that out, because we know there was a lot of moisture. Ernesto said there was quite a bit of liquids coming out of the piles. So
when is the next audit?
That would be, let's see, we're going to do it the week, the Wednesday before Thanksgiving.
Oh, boy.
It's already been decided that will be the date. Ernesto was really actually kind of pushing that because he wanted it to be far enough past the Halloween, because whenever we have a holiday, we have a lot of contamination. And before the major holidays.
Okay.
So Republic agreed and we're set.
All right. Okay. Well, we'll be anxious to hear what happens with that. And hopefully we'll all think about pushing those prices up so we can get some more money out of that. Any questions? Trevor, any questions about the MRF report or what's happening with that?
No, I don't think so. Where do we? I think I may have missed it earlier. Where do we sit on the timeline for an updated contract with the MRF?
So the current amendment expired in April, March, at the end of March. Mm-hmm. So we have had an extension because we want to look at some costs that will, you know, perhaps be more equitable, but that's the whole idea.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Uh-huh. Keep pushing on it. All right, collections. Who's doing collections today?
Oh, that's going to be me. That's going to be me.
Okay.
Thank you for having me here. Yeah, no, I wanted to follow up on last month's ESEC meeting regarding the roll-off neighborhood association and them actually requesting additional roll-offs. And so I think...
We've lost you. Or I've lost you.
I've lost.
Not hearing anything either.
We're not hearing anything.
Let me double check his office. He might be. Okay. I'll double check real quick.
I'm sorry. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, now we can.
Where did I leave off at?
You were just talking about the neighborhood association and the roll-offs.
Okay. Sorry about that. So yeah, basically, we had a neighborhood association, Richmond Heights. They had requested 6 roll-offs. We were only able to drop off 4.
Right.
And so we made provisions with our brush and bulky crew to go ahead and pick up all the accumulation. It seemed to work out really, really well. And so we're continuing with that same progress there. You know, we're actually using the roll-off employees or operators are actually advising the supervisors if there's any accumulation and give them feedback or giving feedback to the supervisors, and that way they know how much yardage is still out there. You know, so.
Okay. All right.
And then on the next one, I just wanted to give you guys a little update on the new homeless camp cleanup program. Yes.
Good.
So the homeless camp cleanup started as of July 1st of 2022. And so far, tier one, which means no tenants on site, we've had a total of 196 that we've actually done.
Wow.
Yeah, cleanup so far. The tier two, which are low risk tenants, which we are just cleaning around occupants there, 68. And tier three, which are high risk tenants where police are, you know, where we're looking at actually providing a 2-hour notice to actually vacate the areas. We've actually cleaned up 16. So it's a total of 280 and about maybe 70 per month. That's what we're looking at right now. Pending right now, we have one tier three. And so far, so good. Good work from our brush and bulky crews out there.
What was tier one again, Luis?
Tier one is no tenants, no occupants at all. So they're okay. The easy ones, you know, the low-hanging fruit.
Right.
Okay. Well, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And yet I drive around, I'm sorry to say, I'm sure as you do too, that there's still a lot out there.
Exactly.
I did see the city having done quite a good job with sending materials out, both electronically and in the newspapers, about how the system was working. So,
and TPD is involved too. So they've got the whole program going together. They don't do the cleanup, but they help move people.
Exactly.
And the housing and community development are dealing with the people.
Okay. And the third thing I wanted to share with you was that the Southern Arizona Construction Career Day, that started off today. Let me show you. I got a... let's share this with you guys. It's there you go. Can you guys see that?
Oh, Construction Career Day. Yes.
Exactly. So I want to share that with you guys.
And are you trying to get some drivers out of there?
You know what? That's the whole idea. Okay. So basically we set that up yesterday. We put all the equipment out there. As you can see this picture out here. I mean, there's a lot of people out there. I mean, we got 80 vendors out there and they're all separated in 4 sections. And let me show you this, the next slide here.
Where is it being held?
It's right there at the Kino Sports Complex, right there off of Aho Way. Right,
well, okay.
And this right here, this is one of the flyers that they actually made up. Basically, it's got a QR code right here for the high schoolers that they can actually hit that, and they can actually see there's a lot of information on there. But it gives you an idea what the auto mechanics, what their essential duties are, the minimal qualifications, the plumbers, the ESWs. If I go down to the next one, it's got the equipment operators, the minimum qualifications also. So it's got a lot of information. Also, wow. the heavy equipment mechanic, the shims, HVAC, and it's awesome. Really, really nice. So we had probably about 2,500 kids show up today, and 2,500 kids will show up again tomorrow. And the kids are allowed in each section about an hour and a half. And our department, I mean, we had all these different departments showing what they had, you know. Let's see.
And could you climb into a truck?
No, I didn't climb in the truck personally, but yeah, it was just really hard because there was like maybe groups of 20, 25 people coming in at a time. And so you had to show them around, you know, every single area, and they would stay in that one area that they were actually interested in. And let me see. This is the group of people that were actually out there today. The tent that we had out there, the group of people there, and the little setup that we had, tools. They were showed up all the tools there. And these are all the kids there wearing the orange vest and the hard hats. Mm-hmm. This is our rear loader that we have out here, and also a TPD police officer vehicle. And the kids were allowed to go ahead and go in there and take apart, starters and put it back together again. And we gave them a lot of fun bag and all kinds of other goodies out there.
Well, great. What a good idea.
Exactly. So hopefully that'll bring up some people.
What were the age ranges of the kids that came out?
They're basically, I guess, middle school and high school kids, you know. So we're looking at probably 15 to 18 years old.
Okay. Nice. Very cool. Chris, you're muted.
A lot of the students are in JTED programs.
Okay.
Yeah. Because they do, because they have competitions at some of the high schools and all that good stuff. And, you know, Pima downtown campus has an awesome setup for construction and auto mechanics and stuff. So
this was our first year. So it was new to us, but we were a little surprised. And I mean, we're already thinking about what we can probably do next year to make it better. And all kinds of ideas that are getting thrown around. So, yeah, so hopefully it'll be better next year.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, that's great outreach.
Yes. Wonderful.
Perfect.
Good job. So you've been spending a lot of work on that, I'm sure. Those things don't come together by themselves.
And you have to be around middle school and high school kids. I've done both.
Oh, yeah. I bet you both have.
All right. And so everything else moving along pretty well with the collections?
Yes, everything's moved along pretty well.
Okay. No new trucks have come in or?
We got one rear loader, and that's still going through the process. But yeah, we're more than likely they're all going to show up next year, probably in the beginning of next year.
All right. Very good. Any other questions? All right. Let's move on to public outreach and Zero Waste Day this Saturday.
This Saturday. Yes. So we had a couple of things, though. We had Saturday before last, we had the Boo Bash at Lincoln Park. And Lucy and Greg Diller, who were there to help out, Greg is one of our drivers, were exhausted because we had so many kids trying to get in the truck. They would let them sit in the truck and hit the air horn. And we had a line of kids halfway across the field. It was very funny because when we got there, they asked us to move. So, well, you'll be more visible this way because everybody always finds the fire truck. I'm like, oh, there wasn't a line at the fire truck. It was all about the garbage truck. So, and then we had these cornhole games and Lucy ran that and poor thing, she was just bending over, picking them up, bending them up. So, but yeah, we ran out of everything. I had glow sticks. We had bags of chips. We had 12 bags of candy and everything was gone by the end of the evening. So it was quite the hit.
Cool.
And Saturday we do have the Zero Waste Collection event, which I think we're going to get a big crowd, Margo. So we do have police that are going to be directing traffic.
Good.
So I, you know, hopefully we won't run into too many problems. But I've been getting a lot of emails and phone messages from people asking about it. So, I think it will be a pretty big success. And then, we've been working with the Compost Cats to, we wanted to have some evening kind of just information sessions about compost with them leading and teaching. And the first one was last night and we didn't have anybody. It was at Armory Park. Tonight is at Ward 6. So we're hoping for, some attendees. But I have to tell you, we've had these rate increase meetings. The first one, we had 4 members of the public.
Wow. That's
the second one, apparently, there were no members of the public. And the third one, there were maybe 4 people again.
Oh, that's sad.
So I don't know if it's because we're getting kind of close to the holidays or people are just really busy. I will tell you, Trevor, we were talking today, Lisa and I, about, you know, what we can do, because we do want to move the compost. On November 19th, Parks and Rec has this huge event called the Family Fun Festival. And we always have a booth there and we do some activities. But, you know, if the Compost Cats would like to be there to, you know, have some just general little information, because they get about, they've said 15,000 people in the past.
Wow.
And wow. It's family. It's typically people that we would not normally see at an Earth Day or, you know, a like event. Mm-hmm. So if you guys want to join us, I'm partnering with Tucson Clean and Beautiful as well. So
are you in the weekly meetings on Thursday mornings, Christina?
I haven't been, but I think I'm in the next one.
Okay. If
and I'm going to see the kids tonight.
Okay. Yeah. Mention it to them. I'll mention it to Ilse as well. I'm going to be out of office for about 2 weeks starting tomorrow. So I'm not the person to entrust with figuring out the logistics for that. But I'll ask Ilse, and I'm sure it's something that we could attend.
Yeah, it's a really fun event. Again, we get lots of people. At this one, we usually do like a craft, something that they can do and then take with them. So this might be, you know, a really good opportunity to get to people about compost opportunities and get rid of some of it.
With Zudu.
Yes. So those are the outreach events. I will tell you that today I actually reserved the bus so we can do the Valentine's Day landfill and MRF tour for the first time since 2019, I guess. We didn't do it. I guess we did the last one in February of 2020, and then everything ended. So I did make the reservation for that. So that's coming up. And as far as our outreach for the new year, people will start seeing the HHW schedule for 2023 in their November bills. December, of course, will be the holiday schedule and tree cycle. And then in December and January, we'll put the recycling action calendar. So all of that is on track.
Good. I know there's a lot of work in getting all that figured out and laid out and printed and so far. So that's 144,000 or 150,000 mailing is always astonishing. Yes.
And the Brush and Bulky, they actually reached out to me today and said, when can we start mailing? And I said, as soon as you're ready, you know. They're usually super busy around whenever there's an election.
Mm-hmm.
We usually wait until the busyness of the election meetings are through, but they did reach out today. So I think they'll probably start dropping them this week.
Good. Okay. All right. Well, good news. And I'm anxious to see how that zero waste day goes. I know last time it was very, very instructive. And hopefully it's, will do as well this time. All right. Any other questions? Okay. Lori, I guess you're up next for code enforcement.
Great. Good afternoon, everyone.
Hello.
I'm going to share the screen here. So we went live with Intergov on Monday.
Yeah.
So Planning Development Services is the main department that initiated this software change, but we are a part of it. I'm going to show you, and you can probably see by now, this is our start page for this. So every inspector will have the ability to see something like that and even modify it. So when we start scheduling inspections, this is going to show us if we have any on today or if we miss them, like, you know, an inspector calls out sick, we'll be able to see those that they missed, any of their active cases, upcoming cases, and those are called, they're in receive status. So they'll get the number, this will list cases and citation. And this hub page is just for me, so I had a few cases that I was doing. And we have quick links, so I've already opened one for manage code case, and I'll just open this one here. So it's really fast. It's web-based. And as you can see here, what it'll do is it'll give us a screen. It'll drill down into details. It's thinking a little bit right now, but it'll put in, when you open the case and you select a type, it'll automatically put in receive status, assign it to the zone inspector. Customer service will put in the description whether it was an emergency. What's really cool is they have something called a workflow, and then this is where we enter our inspections. So we have initial follow-up, and then we can add more workflows. If we go to a citation, there's another one for that. We can link permits if we have a work without permit case. So if we know the permit number, we can add it. Any other contacts. If we start issuing inspection fees at some time in the future, there's a section for that. Printing. I'm going to show something else that I find pretty cool is the report. So here's one report. This is just since Monday. It shows co-enforcement cases. So part of that, fire has enforcement cases too. So this is just showing all of them. You know, so we've opened up like over 140 cases already. You know, and this just shows us the description. We had an emergency case here that's already closed, but overall it's going well. You know, everybody's learning at their own pace. They've had training, but you know, when it comes down to start using it full time, it's always a big change for people. But we're all helping each other and it's going pretty well.
Good.
One more thing.
Okay.
So, as I said, planning development services is the main department for this. So, part of the associated customer service center is through their website. So that's the Tucson Development Center. And you can make a user account, you can apply for permits, but you can also do searches on our cases. But then that's also available as it has been on Pro. And they've updated Pro. I'm sure everyone has seen Pro before.
Yeah, I was wondering.
Changed it where they,
Oh, you're cutting out.
You were cutting out.
Oh, all right. Yeah, because I went to the planning site, and then I thought, oh, are they still doing Pro? So I tried out Pro yesterday too. So Pro is going to still exist.
Yes, which is a good thing. They've made a separate code enforcement section. It's good because they used to put all the permits and code cases together. So that's helpful. And what it'll do, it'll take all the old closed cases from Permits Plus that gets uploaded here. And then the new cases from InterGov and the transferred ones that were not completed yet will be uploaded from the InterGov. So you'll get both sets of information in one place. So it's helpful for us as well as the public. And we actually can still access Permits Plus just as a legacy database. I mean, we can see notes that we entered before. We just can't make any changes or edits.
I've been looking at assessor's office material for houses in my neighborhood. And there are those things called notes at the bottom. Do these things go over to that in the note, or how does that note happen where it says, for instance, a permit was issued for this and so, or whatever?
On OPA Pro?
I don't know where it comes from. It just is in the assessor's office, in the assessor's record where you're going through. Looking at, maybe it's not the assessor, maybe it's the recorder's office, and you're looking at the property, how many rooms it has, what its value is, and there's a section called permits and a section called notes, and the notes often have to do with, you know, some adjustment that was made.
Yeah, it's directly from Pima County. So any notes are from a Pima County evaluator or assessor agent. And that no, there is no city information that comes from us in there.
Okay, thank you. All right. Well, I'm glad that it seems to have been going so well. I think we all were very nervous for you.
Yeah. Well, we're, like I said, we're all still learning. It's going to be that way.
Sure.
As we adjust to
it. You've made it to the 21st century. We started talking about this in 2014. about getting an update. So,
a little well, think about that. Furnace Press has been active since 1997.
I know. That's what I said. 20th century, 21st. Yay.
Well, I'm sorry. I do have to leave early, but okay. If there's any questions.
Any other questions for Lauren? All right.
Thanks, Lauren. Okay.
Thanks, Lauren. Thanks for the demonstration. That was very instructive.
Very nice. Oh, you're welcome, and have a great evening. Thank you.
You too.
Okay, and then number 10, Frank. I think you're in charge of Los Reales Sustainability Campus.
Yes, how is everyone doing? I'll just give you some quick updates on... first of all, the HSW construction out here at the campus, it's scheduled to be complete around February, March. So it's still ongoing. And then cell 4B design, the bid package will be going out in about two weeks. So hopefully we'll get that up and running.
Okay, and I missed what will be finished February or March?
Oh, the HSW construction expansion.
Oh, that household hazard, HSW. Okay, that facility. All right. Okay, 4B design. So, what is happening with the stormwater collection?
I didn't mention anything about stormwater collection. It was just the cell 4B design.
Mm-hmm.
The bid package will be going out in about 2 weeks.
Right. But in order to do 4B, I thought they had to rejigger the stormwater collection. Because the pond is going away.
Right. So it involves moving and it's not the stormwater pond. It's the pump and treat system, the treated water.
Oh, okay.
That pond needs to be moved. It is in the design, so it'll be part of the whole capital improvement project.
So hopefully we'll get a field trip there.
Yeah. Hopefully once we have a little more advanced construction, we can get everyone back out here.
Yeah.
Cool.
Any news on the gas capture, the methane gas capture?
I can't remember if maybe the last time we did have a, that bid package went out. It's going to be a two-step process. The first one is to solicit, what are they called? It's not an RFP, an RFQ, request for qualifications.
Mm-hmm.
And we had that, I want to say, a couple of weeks ago. Excellent turnout. We had quite a lot of companies that are interested, or at least showed interest in submitting a proposal or qualifications for that process. And that would be to clean up the landfill gas and then inject it into the pipeline. And that the renewable natural gas could then be used in the transportation industry.
When are those bids due?
Forgot about that.
Good question. I don't have that date right in front of me. But I believe that we gave, it was either 4 or 6 weeks.
Okay.
So I want
a couple of weeks.
Right.
We should have you should have the bid by the December ESAC meeting, right?
I'm saying it might be towards the end of November or early December.
Any more movement on the sustainability campus specifically or?
The only thing that's happened is that we met with the architects, and so they are putting together initial designs for us to look at. And primarily phase one is to include the entrance facility, which is the intersection right outside of the upper entrance. It'll also include redoing our entrance road up to the scale, expansion of parking here right next adjacent to the administration building. Mm-hmm. And it's also going to include the north perimeter walking path that's being proposed, which includes the fencing, the path, and the landscaping. Okay. So it's initial stages. So it's really not, once we start seeing some design, actual designs, I will start sharing that information.
Okay. Well, that's quite a bit to get a handle on. Yeah. All right. Any other questions about that? All right. Okay. If not, then we have future items for the next meeting. Any, Trevor, do we want to continue digging in with you on the campus stuff, or how would you like us to talk some more about it? Or
The next, what's the date of the next meeting?
It's the first Wednesday in December.
Okay, so it'd be December 7th.
Yeah, sounds right.
Since I'll be out for 2 weeks in November and then Thanksgiving happens right after that, I think if we looked at bringing me back for January, that would give me a little bit more time. January, February would give me more time for discussing with somebody on my team, and then also housing a little bit more about what plans are looking like for this year. And we could have a more productive conversation beyond just no updates.
Sure. Sounds good. That's why I asked. Okay.
So our, for item 11, there was going to be a discussion on, our meeting times. I mean, I'm sort of stuck in this time. It works well for me, day and time.
Right. When I talked with Yolanda at the Zero Waste, she said Thursdays was a more, she had structured her programs around Thursdays being open. So it might be that if we went to the first Thursday of the month, rather than Wednesday, that would work. Would that work for you?
Yeah, I think so. It could, but so you're saying that Yolanda still wants to be on?
Yeah, she wants to participate. She just, this particular time, you know, her job situations have changed over the years with us, so we know that that it varies, but it seems at this time that Wednesday just isn't feasible.
We do have to accommodate staff, so, you know, it depends on.
Christina, what about Wednesdays for you? Thursdays instead of Wednesday. Are you there?
She might have stepped away real quick.
Yeah.
No, I'm here. Sorry. Okay. I couldn't find the mute button.
Unmute button. How about Thursdays instead of Wednesdays?
Yeah, that's fine with me. That works.
Okay.
The only really bad days for us are Mondays.
Mondays. Okay.
So Thursdays at 3? First Thursday of every month?
Let's try the first Thursday. Lucy, that does mean that if we're going to make that change, that we need to notify the city clerk's office?
Yes.
So tell them that. Is that okay with you, Trevor? Is that still available for you Thursdays?
Yeah, that works great.
Okay.
And then everybody else on ES, so.
Yeah, on the staff.
Does that work for you guys? Louise? Frank?
That works good for us.
Okay.
Yep.
All righty. So the next meeting will be the first Thursday, which is, according to my calendar, actually, that puts us on the 1st of December.
Okay.
So that'll be even, would it be even harder for Trevor? So it's good we move it.
So with the three who have been showing up for these meetings, we've always been discouraged from going to four. So is Lucy, do you know how that works?
I think the reasoning is that if you have four, then you have to have three people show up.
Right.
And so the issue is, you know, if this makes it possible for Yolanda to come, and if Trevor, if you would be interested in joining us on a regular basis to discuss these things, then, you know, we do ask that you make as best you can, knowing that life happens.
Yeah.
Join us.
I, from my perspective, very happy to join on that monthly basis. Thursdays work great for me pretty consistently, other than January. I'll be out of town again. But other than that, looking into the next year, I shouldn't have any issues there.
Okay. Well, I can appoint you.
Okay.
Right away. I can send an email off, all right?
Okay, that sounds good. I did let Brittany and I think Lucy as well know that I won't be able to join next week's meeting. So if there's anything that needs to happen there, I won't be able to join full meetings until the next month.
All right. I just give a report of the meeting. So
okay.
We'll do that.
All right.
Wonderful. Well, thank you all. We did. Thank you all so much. And happy travels and happy Zero Waste Day on Saturday.
And happy Thanksgiving, too.
Oh, well, we'll see each other before then.
Okay.
Thank you all.
Bye.
Bye. Good evening, everybody.
Thanks.
Bye.